This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book, although they better be inside today because we have a really big rainstorm here. But I am full of sunshine because I am going to be talking to somebody who is full of sunshine. And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Gabrielle St. George, because she is not only a Patsy Award winner, she is just one of my very, very favorite authors. Hi.
Hi, girlfriend. How are you?
Okay. Well, it is so good to have you back on, because last time when you were here, we were talking about How to Kill a Kingpin, the number two book in your ex-Whisperer files, and it's a terrific book, and I know you finished book three, right?
No. Not yet? Writing it. I am late with it, which I am never late, but as you know, my mom passed a couple of months ago, I was the only one in her life, so it's been a lot. I just had her celebration of life 2 weeks ago. I had a burial 2 months ago. But so there's kind of been that. And then for her celebration of life, I had many visitors here for 3 weeks who just left yesterday. So I'm a little behind, but I'll start pulling all-nighters now and hopefully stay on schedule.
Well, that's nice. Of course, she passed away when it was colder, I think.
Yeah.
You didn't want to bring a lot of people, because I remember that you had a few blizzards and one very spectacular one.
We definitely did. We had spring came kind of early, but the winter was hard. Although we haven't had like the crazy heat waves like you guys. I'm at my cottage, so I am on the shores of Lake Huron. It's just like 22 degrees, sunny, gorgeous. And if you don't hear me well, I'll just get a coat hanger and climb up on the roof, and we'll continue talking. You let me know if the connection's not great.
No, it's great, actually. It's really good. And, it's wonderful to be there on Lake Huron, because it is so beautiful there.
Really, it's just like the Caribbean. I mean, it just looks like the ocean. Well, you know when you're on the other side of that lake. You wouldn't know if, other than no salt, you wouldn't know it's not the ocean. It's gorgeous.
I know. It's so funny. The water comes from the west there. Also in Lake Superior, we have these miles and miles of pure white beaches, and people are always so surprised because they think it's going to be sort of rocky over there, but it's beautiful beaches, so wow. Yeah, and of course, is this where you dance in the moonlight?
Oh, sure, yes. I live on a farm, also not too far from my cottage, literally a 20-minute drive now, because I moved up here. I had the cottage first, but then moved up onto this farm 2.5 years ago. And I love a 20-minute commute to the cottage. I can just pop back and forth. And this is my happy place. This little cottage was built in 1932. It's the sweetest cottage in the world, I think. And I just, this is literally my happy place. And the lake's so gorgeous.
Oh, I know the feeling.
And, you know, we have also here on the whole Bruce Peninsula, which is our part of Lake Huron, there's eight dark sky preserves in Ontario, my province here, and five of them are on the Bruce Peninsula. So lots of stars, gorgeous viewing, you know. And Northern Lights, you see a lot here.
Oh, it's lovely. And people who are looking for a place to visit Northern Michigan or there on that side of Canada, it's beautiful. But yeah. We were the same way. We lived sort of in town, and then we had a camp. It was 20 minutes away. We didn't call it a cabin. It wasn't quite as fancy to call it a cabin, so we called it the camp. It was, you know, a fishing camp and a hunting camp. The guys used it in the winter, or, you know, during hunting season. But, That
did you guys go ice fishing too?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you did.
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh yes, that was a big thing for us. We loved it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of, you know, we were so lucky, I think, that we didn't have any of those devices, electronic devices in those days. So we lived a sort of wild life.
True, kid. You just went out and got amused yourself. You know, I just listened to a podcast, and the most recent study, it was British, but in the UK, 5 to 12-year-old children spend less time outdoors than the average prisoner, because the UN dictates that prisoners have to have 1 hour a day outdoors. So 5 to 12-year-olds in the UK are spending less than an hour a day outdoors, and it's probably worse in Canada and the US. You know, it's terrible.
It is.
So they're on screens. They are on screens. I think, well, what are they doing if they're not outside at all? They're on their screens.
Well, on the way to the studio, I drive through this lovely area, sort of by a golf course, and it's these lovely houses with these enormous, you know, front yards. And in the old days, the kids would have been out there playing, and, you know, now you see no kids. You see, one day I actually saw 3 kids in a yard, and it was so surprising, I stopped, because you never see kids in a yard. And I just was watching them. They were playing. And I realized, and they were dressed nicely. So I realized, well, they probably don't live here. They're visitors, probably from some other country.
I know. When you see, like, when I see kids on bikes, I'm like, oh, look at, there's kids riding their bikes.
I know.
Yeah, it's not good, Cassie. It's not good.
No, it's not. It's really, that's one of the things that, it's frightening. And of course, you have, your children are all in England, right?
Yeah, they're all grown. They're all in England. Yeah, they all came over for the last few weeks and with partners. We were squeezed into this little cottage. But anyway, yeah, last one left yesterday. But yeah, they're doing great.
Well, I think when we were young, we had our imaginations to just take us away. I was everything, you know, running around all summer long. I could have been a pirate. I could have been an explorer. I could have been, you know, in a war. But I was having fun.
And when you needed to rest, what did you do? You read a book.
Oh, the hammock. We had a hammock tied between 2 birch trees.
Aw, yeah, that's gorgeous.
And you know, the sound of a birch tree is so, it's so special. Just that rustling sound. We were very lucky. You're right. I'm afraid of what's going to happen to this next generation. And unfortunately, I mean, we really need more readers. So we need more people to go out and just kick the kids out of the house and give them a book.
Right? True.
Yeah.
Take the phone away, though. Yeah.
Exactly. Because there are so many wonderful books to read, and we are so, you know, I was so happy. I think you discovered that I have this wonderful radio fan who does journals, and she journaled you.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
I hope it was good. Was it positive?
Huh?
Was it positive?
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we're trying to do everything here we can to get more people to read. And now that the pandemic is over, I'm starting again to go around to events and quite often to homeschool organizations, meeting with children. I gather books for children so that, especially during the summer, to support reading. But
fabulous.
You know, you're so good. You're so very good. And I've been talking to a lot of writers, and they always ask, you know, how do you get to this point? And I think one of the things for you, of course, you are, I think, a natural list maker like I am. I love lists. And I think that really a list is a motivator. If you write a list and you say, this is what I want to accomplish, it really does focus you, doesn't it?
Also, yes, it does. And also, how satisfying does it feel to cross anything off a list? So satisfying.
That's what I love about it. I love to do it. I'm compulsive. Once I have a list, I just want to work on it.
Yeah, I know. It's a good reminder. Yeah, some of our brains are wired that way, aren't they?
And, it's a discipline, too, because you have to, one of the things to be a successful writer, especially these days, you have to be disciplined.
Yeah, you have to be disciplined, and, you have to be allotting, I'm going to say 50-50, but it's not. It's probably 80-20, 80% of your time to marketing yourself, social media. I don't enjoy that at all. I'm not great at it at all, but the authors who really focus on that, they actually can make a name for themselves, even if their books are less than. It's just a huge part of the industry now. I think for any artist, even painters, that's what it is. You have to, because there's so much noise. How do you make your book heard? How do people find you or hear of you? You have to make noise.
Well, one of the ways, of course, is going to these events. Have you gone to some events recently? Yes, you went to New York.
And I'm also going to Reykjavik. I'm speaking at Iceland Noir in November, and I'm really excited about that. Dan Brown, Neil Gaiman, huge author is going to be there. Don't know why I am going to be there, but if they hold it in mid-November, because it is the darkest time of the year. I mean, I think there's only 1 hour of sunlight there. And it's, dark literature. So, yeah, that is, that's the next trip in November. So excited about that.
Whoa.
Going to be on a panel speaking there. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's fun.
Yeah, you would think they would have put it, in their sunniest time. But doing that, I think that's a great experience for people.
Yeah, I went to Reykjavik a year and a half ago for Christmas, but took my kids there. And even then, it's such an unusual place because you see kids on their scooters going to school, and it is pitch black out. And they're just going down the road on their way to school in the dark, But it's really cool. But it is Iceland Noir, so it's about dark crime fiction.
Oh, that sounds good. I like that idea.
Mm-hmm. But
this is one of the things that you have to do. What else do you do to get out there? You mentioned social media. Is there one particular one that you've found more effective?
I mean, I think really probably Facebook is the most effective. That's my least favorite. I prefer Instagram. But Facebook, that's where all the groups are, and the book clubs are pretty much all on Facebook. But for writers who are looking to make a dent in there, get their foot in doors, then Bookstagrammers are a fabulous thing, which is, of course, Instagram. And it's grown to be a really huge community of book readers. A lot of them are now, book reviewers, amateur, but treated as professionals. And even the big five publishing houses send books to these top Instagrammers or Bookstagrammers because they have a lot of followers and they have a lot of clout. When they recommend a book, so I will always send out my art to, I have a long list of Bookstagrammers, and they're all really supportive. And that's a really good way for writers who are looking to, just gain a little bit of popularity to reach out to Bookstagrammers and offer their book, to be reviewed. They don't really like to do it if it's already been published for a while. So either pre-published date or right around publishing date. But it's a good thing for writers to do, for sure.
Well, it is, as you said, when you think about it, 80% of your time on marketing, it's a lot of time.
Other authors might say 50%, but that would be the bare minimum. It depends how big a splash you want to make, or just how much you want to, expand your following or readership. You got to put a lot of time in. Even the big houses don't do it now. They don't have, that's not where their budget goes. It's just not. And even if you writers are listening to this who aren't published yet and are looking for publishers, then I would highly suggest focusing on social media while you're writing before you're sending to publishers, because now big publishers, but and agents for sure, which is the only way you can get to, through to a big publisher, but even like indie houses and smaller houses, they will ask in your, like, as soon as, if they hear, read your query letter and they're interested in seeing anything, first things they'll have you fill out is the platforms you're on and how many followers you have, because they want to know that they can't do it for you. And if you don't have anyone listening to you or reading you, or even, maybe you're not published yet, but people who are potential readers, they're not interested. You have to do that.
Oh, it's difficult. It's difficult. I somehow can't imagine Hemingway doing it, but
no, it's a whole different world. It was everything, even AI, right? It's I don't know if you've played around with AI yet, but
I'm afraid of it. I don't know. I haven't put it on my. I haven't clicked on. I get so many offers to use it. Mm-hmm. Bing is like pushing it every day. Like, click on this button, and you'll have AI. But I don't know. I haven't done it yet. Have you?
Yeah, I mean, I have. I think you'll like it. What did it start? 2 months ago?
Yeah.
2.5 months ago? It's not old, right? And it's, when it first started, I did, and I would, you know, you can say, like, write a spicy romance scene between two middle-aged people on their first date. Say anything you want. And it would spit it out in a few seconds, and it would be terrible. I mean, the worst writing anyone could ever, ever come up with. And I was like, you know what? My job's not in danger. But now, 2.5 months later, my job is in danger. I'm not kidding. Now, if I put anything in there, it gives me some pretty decent stuff. Not anything I would use, but I think it's a good tool. First of all, it's not going anywhere. It's here to stay, and it's going to get better and better every day. But I think it's a great tool for brainstorming ideas. If you're stuck in a plot, story point, or even like sometimes people want help with like themes, or maybe you're writing a scene in Reykjavik and you haven't been, and you can say, like, describe a bar on a Saturday night in Reykjavik to me, and you know, it'll do it, and it's pretty darn good. It's pretty, pretty good.
Oh boy. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to start watching out to see if I think something's been written by AI.
Yeah, it's amazing. But what it'll be, what I'm thinking, like, in 2.5 months from now, what will it be like? Pretty good. Pretty good.
But of course, they're getting that way by swallowing up more and more of original writing.
Of course. Do you know what's interesting? I put something in. Political asked a question, like, not for my work, just like I just had a question for interest's sake a couple days ago, and it gave me an answer, but it said my knowledge only goes up to September 2021. So that's the input so far of information worldwide in AI only goes up to September 21. So say anything to do with COVID, or it wouldn't know about the Ukraine war, stuff like that. So you can't, you know, it's not all there yet. It's definitely not 100%.
Oh, boy. So for now, at least, you're going to have to come up with your own metaphors and...
Yeah.
Red herrings, which you're pretty good at.
And emotions, right? I'm hoping that that's the part that it won't quite ever, you know, nail, is the emotion behind writing. But who knows?
Well, you know, for my listeners, of course, I want to tell them a little bit about Gina Malone, because I think it was so clever of you. You had written nonfiction books, sort of advice books, and then you took this idea of your nonfiction books and turned it into a series. Explain how you did that.
So it's actually the other way around. I had the idea for the book of that she would be a relationship advice columnist, and then I just thought, as kind of a cool, fresh, I think not done prior, marketing tool, I would have her write some of these nonfiction relationship advice books. So I did those first. I did three of them. And then I wrote the book. So they came out at the same time as, you know, like a support for the book, just like something kind of fun on the side. So that's how I did that. came up with the idea for her first.
Well, that was clever.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been done before.
No, I don't think so.
I haven't come across anyone who can point to an example, so might have been a fresh idea.
Well, you're a genius, that's all I can say.
I can't do the other part of the marketing. The posting every day, the videos, oh.
Exactly. What kind of things do you like to post? I mean, now you said you do Facebook, and do you do it every day? I mean,
no.
I find it very difficult to do it every day.
It's so time-consuming, isn't it? And the thing is, it's a time suck. I mean, you can scroll forever. The other new thing is TikTok, right? Are you on TikTok, Patsy?
No.
I'm not either, but also just want to say for potential writers who may be listening to this or writers who are looking to expand, I mean, I sat in on a webinar on TikTok a couple weeks ago, and it really is the platform now. People, I'm going to pick numbers out of a hat right now, but it'll give you an idea. On Instagram and Facebook, the users are in the billions, let's say, and the viewers are a fraction of that. But on TikTok, it's the other way around. The viewers are in the billions, and the people who are creating content are a fraction of that. And that's why so many people go viral on TikTok, which is great. I mean, that really can be a massive help and change overnight your profile online, how many people are aware of you. So if you can figure out how to post, it's not hard, but I'm saying if you are motivated to post on TikTok, the other nice thing about TikTok, and I've never posted anything, I'm not on it, but here I'm trying to inspire myself here. The other nice thing about TikTok is what people want and like is kind of unedited, uncurated videos. So it's all videos, right? Not still photos. TikTok is videos. But it's like pointing a camera at yourself, your phone at yourself, and sharing whatever you're sharing. Whereas you know how Instagram has got very curated, you know, the carousel, the different, you know, they're all highly edited. TikTok's easier. They want just like kind of raw videos. So that's a good thing for people to keep in mind.
And so you're trying to do this, not TikTok, but Instagram, you're trying to do it every day to maintain
when my first book came out, well, prior to it coming out and the first year it was out, I did post every day. And I mean, it was exhausting. I actually haven't posted on social media all in a couple of months. I have to get on that for sure. But it was definitely, I did do it every day, and it takes up so much time. It takes up a lot of time. I really don't love it, mostly mildly.
So how many followers do you have on Instagram?
I think I haven't looked in a while, it's just under 3,000. That's someone who doesn't post all the time, or very rarely. Yeah.
But
still 3,000. Yeah.
Now, have you also tried newsletters?
No, I mean, and that's another, I mean, everything I read also, and everything that I hear coaches say, marketing coaches, the email list is really the most important thing. And if writers can compile an email list, that's really where your power is. And so that's where newsletters come in, like you're mentioning. And you own your email list, but you don't own your page on Instagram or Facebook or your TikTok account, right? The Facebook owns that. And that's why when those things go down or they censor your page for some reason you don't understand, you're just out of luck. But your email list are people who are genuinely interested in you and maybe even invested in you and your work. So I think that's where the strength is. And Patsy, I am going to get on this. I'm going to get on this. A newsletter is a lot of work too, though, right?
It is.
It all takes away from the writing for sure. But
well,
we can't write in a vacuum.
Well, I know it's been a rough few months, but I'm happy that you had an opportunity to celebrate your mother's life. And I know she must have been very proud of you.
She was a big fan. She was a good old gal. I miss her a lot.
Well, yeah. It's wonderful when, something will happen, good happens that your parents can see. I was very happy that my films were optioned and appeared in the Hollywood Reporter. And so I had, a full page ad in the Hollywood Reporter, which is a big deal. And of course, I got my father 10 copies of the Hollywood Reporter. He gave them to all the, because we have, a whole county in Michigan that's practically relatives. And so he went around giving everybody a Hollywood Reporter. They'd never seen one. And then they turn it and they see, oh my goodness, Patsy has, and he was so proud. And he was so proud. And I was so happy that, he lived long enough to see that because, that made me so happy.
I know. My mom was a big fan, but probably still secretly disappointed I didn't become a doctor.
Other than that. They're always, me too. I was supposed to be a doctor too. Anyway, it's wonderful to talk to you, and keep writing, and you'll be back here when, soon as you have a release date, you'll tell us, okay?
Oh, thank you. And it was so nice to talk to you again, gal, and to connect with your audience. Such a fabulous, special group. Really feel privileged to be a part of your
whole. We love you.
Yeah, okay. I love you. Girl.
Have a great summer.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Patsy. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we're going to play a book buzz. We'll skip the commercials till the end of the program, but let's play a book buzz, and then I'll be here with my next guest.
Hello, fellow mystery lovers. This is author Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with a mystery that will keep you turning the pages. Carol J. Perry's Now You See It. Sometimes 13 is a lucky number, and for fans of Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mystery series, it is, with this latest installment that features Lee Barrett, the program director for Salem, Massachusetts, local station WICH-TV. In Now You See It, Lee and her husband, Detective Sergeant Pete Mondello, are settling into their new home. The honeymoon is over, and Lee is back on the job as program director for Salem's WICH-TV, recently promoted to historical documentary chief executive. Her first project is to promote Salem's new international museum. Seems easy enough. She loves looking at their collection and doing research about Salem's long-ago days as a shipping capital. That is until the driver of a truckload of antiquities turns up dead. Soon, Lee and Pete are dredging up clues along with a hearty crew of helpers. Aunt Ibby, a former librarian, offers her advice, while a local practicing witch, River North, has some ideas too. And of course, Orion, Lee's clairvoyant cat, has his own ideas. But when a ship model in the exhibit's collection appears to be haunted, Lee will have to dive into her own treasure trove of psychic gifts. For author Carol J. Perry, juggling details and coming out with twisty plots is her specialty. After all, she was born on Halloween Eve in Salem. Special thanks to Kensington Publishing for another great cozy mystery. Pre-order Now You See It by Carol J. Perry and expect the unexpected in a mystery that features a memorable cast of characters and lots of page-turning fun. This book will be released on September 26, 2023. Now You See It! Book number 13 in Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mystery Series is available online. This is Rita Moreau, author of the Ghost and Camper Cookie Mystery Series, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions, go to our website, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. Buzzing off for now.
Okay, I'm going to hold the commercials until after I talk to my guest because she's on the line, and I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Barbara Wolf Terra. I'm not sure how to pronounce your last name. Hey, Barbara, are you there?
Hi, Patsy. Very good to talk with you. Yeah, and it's Terrar, or you can say it any way you want.
So it's Barbara Wolf Terrar.
Yes.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, it sounds fine.
What nationality is that?
My husband is 100% Japanese, so I guess it Terao means something about a temple or the back of a temple in Japan.
Ah, okay. Well, I thought that's an interesting name. I hadn't come across it. I like it very much. Terao, I can do that.
I guess it's also a famous sumo wrestler with that name, so that's, you know, but no relation.
Okay. Well, I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper. And as I said, you know, I wanted to get you on once you called in. The name of your book is Reconfigured, a Memoir. And, you know, it's a very touching book and I think an inspirational book. And that's what I like to do here on Joy on Paper. I like to have a variety of books. I might have, you know, Lee Child with a Jack Reacher book. I might have just had a cozy mystery author. I love to have nonfiction books. And one of the things I love to do is have inspirational books and books that will help people first perhaps understand a problem in life, whether it's a health issue or whatever. And you certainly, your book is that. But your book is also more than that. It is just very, very well written. It's obviously you have this, you know, you have the background of being a writer, but your writing is excellent.
Oh, wow. That's great to hear. Thank you. I think I've been writing since I was in, you know, in grade school anyway. Yeah.
And so you did work as a reporter, and you were a TV host?
That's right. That's right. And I'm a psychologist by education. I have 3 degrees in psychology, and but I really always enjoyed the writing aspect. And, it's kind of... I thought someday I would write a book, and only until the pandemic came did I sit down and do it.
So this is your first book?
Right.
Well, I predict that there's going to be another book out of you, and perhaps next will be a novel. You know, sometimes with authors, you have to write that story that's in you.
Yes.
The first book, you have to sort of get it out, and then once you see this, how really in your case, how beautiful the words look on paper. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're going to be writing something else.
I think the one thing that they said, I had a good Kirkus review, which is a type of book review.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the one sort of critique, which wasn't a bad thing, was that they said, readers may want to know more about my spiritual perspectives. And I'm like, oh, well, that might be I have a book of essays in me, I feel, and that might be one of the focus.
Exactly. It might be a book of essays. It might be a novel, because you have that talent. That's for sure. So, you know, this is a story that I think it's important for people to hear. And so why don't you just tell it the way you like to explain what happened to you? Some of it is tragic. A lot of it is hopeful. And a lot of it is just interesting, you know, on so many levels.
Oh, yeah. Well, I grew up living in the Midwest and grew up in Northfield, Minnesota, married my husband. We moved to Chicago and raised our 2 children in Evanston. And it got to be to where I was having, you know, my husband and I, after the kids left home, we really didn't have much in common anymore. And it was kind of a rough patch. And after a few years of trying to work through that, my husband and I came to visit our daughter, Emily, who had moved to a place called Whidbey Island, which is in the Puget Sound of Washington State. And when I visited her, I'm like, this is where I need to be. I just really love the sea and the Douglas fir forest and that sort of the vibe, the people, and being near my daughter, of course. So I said to my husband, I think I want to move here. And he's like, well, I'm not ready to move here. So we actually kind of did this thing, living apart together, which apparently is sort of a trend. They call it LAT, living apart together, where I built a little, you know, had a little cottage built near the sea in Langley, Washington, and lived on Whidbey Island. And then within less than 4 months, I found out I had breast cancer. And here I am, you know, trying to make a go of it on my own and, like, Oh, geez. And my daughter is super busy. She had like 3 jobs at the time. And I had no, I hadn't established my doctors or my health insurance yet. And here I am trying to figure out what to do. I have to take a ferry and figure out where my doctors are. And so basically I went to, a whole year of treatments for breast cancer. And during that time, I thought, at first I thought, well, I'm in the place I need to be. It feels very healing here. And I'll be fine in my little house by myself. And which, by the way, has some relation to the number 13. It was on lot 13. And I kept having those unlucky numbers 13, which was mentioned in the book Buzz that you just had on your radio show. But I tried to call it Lucky 13, but it wasn't. I think it was kind of omen that something bad was coming. Trying to deal with that, I realized I can't do it by myself. And guess who stepped up? My husband, So he stepped in to help me and would fly here whenever he had it. Because of our dog situation, it was not always, easy for him to leave. But anyway, he had showed up, and then, of course, my neighbors and the community stepped in, and I discovered this beautiful resource here on the island called Healing Circles Langley, which has now gone global, which is Healing Circles Global. If any of your listeners want to look into it, it's just a place to get support when you're going through difficult times like cancer or grief. And so this is what the book is basically about. I had to reconfigure, I had surgeries and treatments, and I had to reconfigure my body and my mind and my spirit and realize I'd been holding in a lot of stuff, trying to deal with the stress of several different things, not just my marriage. And I think a lot of us women are raised to be, take care of others first. Well, being alone, living alone anyway on the island, I felt that I had a chance to get to know myself and express my feelings to my own self for the first time. It's hard to believe, but it took me a long time. And then that felt more healthy, because I feel like when we're, stress doesn't directly cause cancer, but it does affect our immune system. And without a strong immune system, your cancer can take hold more easily. So I felt like this is one of the main messages of my book, and why I wanted to write the book, is like, keep your emotions in motion and be true to yourself, or you that stress will take a toll. And I really hope people can get that feeling from the book of be your true self, your authentic self. That's your purpose in this life, in my opinion. That's your mission. If we're not being our unique self, how can we fulfill our unique mission and purpose on the earth,
Well, I mean, you are very lucky that you did have your children and a husband who came out to support you. But for a lot of women, unfortunately, there are a lot of single women who don't have that. So I think what they're looking at when they're reading your book is wondering how did you do it? How did you manage to maintain your strength without giving up?
It was just sheer naivete, is that the word? Of just not realizing how hard it is to go through something like that, and just like, I can do this, kind of feeling on my own. And beyond that, there were just some, I was fortunate enough to connect with really wonderful people on the island, and there's so many giving, helpful people who would bring me food and whatnot, but there were couple friends in particular, my friends Susan and Marilyn, and we all share a Buddhist practice. That's how we met. We like to get together to study Buddhism or do our prayers or whatever. And my gosh, to have that kind of support was huge, that there was, and the practice, being able to have a spiritual practice, whatever it is. And for me, being on the island, it was, every morning being able to center myself and recite a bit of the Lotus Sutra and really focus on what I need to do. And also, though, connecting with nature, if I could say, it's almost, for me, it's a a spiritual practice, so I could take a lot of walks on the beach in the forest here. And then again, like I said, finding that healing circle's Langley, and we just sit in circle and that in a beautiful little cottage by the sea, and every couple weeks I'd join them and we'd be able to say what we're going through. And for me, I'm an extrovert. I don't know what I'm going through until I talk about it with other people. And it's not easy, you know, not a lot of people would, you know, I just didn't feel I could talk to very many people about going through cancer. It's pretty heavy stuff. And but here I could say, in that circle, I could say whatever I needed to, and we would have a chance to talk after the circle, like, what, how did you find that doctor, or how did you get through those kind of things. So I would say find a support network, and there are tons of them. There's a something called Team Survivor that's all over the country. There's so many great places, and like I say, Healing Circles Langley is something anyone can do by Zoom. So there's, that is my biggest tip, because you just have to keep going and to really take it seriously when you're given a diagnosis like that. And at the same time, question your doctors, yes, but really do what you follow the path of treatment you choose, not necessarily the same as what I did, but whatever feels right to you, but also taking it seriously. There's science behind this. There's reasons why doctors recommend what they do. So just to really take that into account.
Yes, I just clicked on Healing Circle's website, and it looks very interesting, and there are lots of opportunities there to find help.
Yes, yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful bunch of people, and it meant the world to me, yeah. And I have a whole chapter about it in my book, so you get a sense of what, you know, what yeah. it's like, yeah.
Of course, now you were born in Minnesota? Were you raised in Minnesota?
Right. Yeah.
Yes. So, and I'm from Northern Michigan. So, you know, I'm sure you had a childhood too, where you were outdoors.
Yes. Yes. Every summer, especially, we'd go up to the lake. You know how you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's what we did too. Like we lived in a small town, but we went to the camp and roughed it, right?
I think that's a wonderful connection to have. And just an interesting note, speaking of family, is my mom was a librarian, and so it's my publication day today, actually. And I was thinking of her and how books were so important to her, and I think she'd be proud of me having a book come out today. And I realized, today I'm talking on Joy on Paper, and my mom's name is Joy.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, that's beautiful. And I'm sure she would be so proud of you, so very proud that you turned out to be a really great writer. So what books influenced you? And were you reading while you were, you know, on the island? Did any books help you? Did you, like, binge read?
There's a lot of wonderful writers on the island, and some of them, like, Christina Baldwin does wonderful, she used to do writing workshops, and authors like that literally helped me. But I think one thing that happened was when I had cancer, the only books I wanted to read, and this sounds morbid, but it made sense at the time, the only books I wanted to read were either about cancer or about death or about, people with cancer. And so I read a lot of memoirs of people who are going through cancer, and many of them have since died. I mean, it's pretty serious stuff, but that's what I want to read. So I thought maybe I could write a book about my experiences, and it will help someone the way I was helped by reading those, just because it's really hard to explain to people who've never been through it. So I think those books kept me company, you know? So,
Well, yeah, that's what books do, and that's why people write, because you want to put it down on paper, and you never know how many people you will touch with a book. You might only touch, you know, a few people, but those people are enriched by what you write.
That's right, and I think there are some really stellar books out about people going through stuff like this. You know, When Breath Becomes Air is one, a memoir. And then there's a very well-known writer, Suleika Jawood, who wrote Between Two Kingdoms, about going through her cancer experiences, which she's still going through. And, yeah, there's quite a few.
It's good that you get this done on paper. I think it's one of the things, as of course you did this during the pandemic when you really needed something to do, which was an outlet for you too. It kept you busy.
Yeah, it was great because also it was interesting because I started my book, going back to that idea of 13 too. For a while, I was calling my book What's Left? Science, Superstition, and Survival, because it includes both science and also some superstitious things, especially the first chapter. I just, you know, a black cat was crossing my path, and all these things were happening. And then I ran across a hearse with my name on it, and it was called Barbie Dream Hearse. And with the Barbie movie coming out, maybe we'll remember the Barbie Dream House. And I'm like, oh no, my ride is here. I guess this is an omen that all these things happen. But then I was like, then I thought of calling my book My Wabi Sabi Life. Is that the Japanese concept of that which is broken or impermanent and imperfect, but that in those broken places we find beauty? But anyway, I ended up just going with the simple one word, reconfigured, because it sort of just, it said several different layers of change, you know, was implied by that. And I was figuring out my figure and all that. So,
well, I think it's, as I said, it's an inspirational book. It's very well written, very well written. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you've had some great reviews, and a lot of people have supported you. And that's always, it makes you feel good when other writers have noticed your writing and have made lovely comments. And I think that's all available. People can go to Amazon and see the list of people who have recommended your book. And again, the name of the book is Reconfigured. You have a website?
Yes, my author website is simply my name, BarbaraWolfTurow.com.
Okay, well, Barbara, thank you for joining me today. And again, I think you'll be back here as soon as you sit down and keep working. You know, now that you told me your mother's name was Joy, Joy on Paper is just the perfect program for you to be on your release date.
Well, it's a great name. I'm not sure how you came up with it, but I sure feel at home with that name, and it's a delight to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining me. Bye-bye now, Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, what a beautifully written book, very inspirational, and it is a book that if you don't have anybody with cancer in your, you know, if you don't, we hope you don't, but if you do, this is a book for you. And if you just know somebody, it's a wonderful book to, you know, tell people about and perhaps to give to somebody, because it will help. She has some great ideas in there. And as she mentioned, she has a chapter there that talks specifically about this Healing Circles, which is a very interesting organization because they also have all sorts of events that people can get involved in. So, again, very good. Reconfigured. All right. Now, let's play the commercials, and then I'm going to come back and talk a minute.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I just wanted to say a few words. I was so happy that Gabrielle St. George was on and that we got to talk about her books and about her writing. As I said, she won the Patsy Award because I was really impressed with her work, and I'm happy that she was able to join me today. I do want to mention also, I don't have enough time to tell the story. I had a very funny thing happen. I will tell the story. Maybe I can do it quickly. My sister woke me up in the middle of the night, and she said to me, I saw Aunt Ibby. And I said, Aunt Ibby is a main character in Carol J. Perry's series, Witch City Mysteries. I said, what do you mean? She said, Aunt Ibby was here. And I said, what do you mean she was here? You know, I don't want to say. I said, she was here? And my sister looked at me, she said, are you going gaga? I don't mean in the room. She said, I saw her on television. I saw the actress who should play Aunt Ibby. Oh, I said, oh, well, that's good. She said, I don't remember her name. So you have to find out what movie I was watching in the middle of the night. And the character there was the perfect one to play Aunt Ibby. And she's been driving me crazy for days for me to figure out who the actress was that is perfect to play Aunt Ibby in the Witch City Mystery series, which we are hoping will be on Hallmark one day. Anyway, so that was my quick story. Everybody, just remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. Of course, that's after they finish this strike. But anyway, you never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. Say something nice to somebody every day, but I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. He saluted me. I saluted him. And boy, oh boy, I wish I was a general. Boy, I would be out there solving problems. Anyway, have a wonderful, wonderful day, everybody. And start writing. Write your memoir. Bye-bye now.